GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1329, May 1st, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from Interstate 57 in southern Illinois. Had to come back to work today. Was off for several days, off work at home, kind of taking time off, and it ended up being kind of an expensive time at home, time off. So we go back earlier in the week. I had turned my when I first got home, it was kind of cool, and the furnace was coming on a bit. The temperature had a couple of nights it actually got down into the 40s, 40 degree range, and so it was kind of cool. Even during the day, it was. There were a couple of days there where it was in the 50s and rather windy, but then towards the later part of the week, it changed and it warmed up quite a bit. And so I had to tried to turn the air conditioner on because they're in my house, because it was getting kind of stuffy in there. Well, the air conditioner, central air conditioner, you have an exterior unit, and then you have the basically the furnace. The air conditioner coils are in the bottom of the furnace, so part of it. And then wherever the compressor is, I think it's actually outside, maybe in that outside unit. But so in any case, tried to turn the air conditioner on, and the part outside wasn't coming on. And so I contacted my the furnace air conditioner repair guy. He's worked on it a number of times, and so he actually made it out there yesterday morning, early yesterday. He got there about 9 o'clock yesterday morning, Friday morning, and at first he looked at it and he said, "Oh, the breaker's thrown." And he tried it, and still no go. And he quickly figured out that the compressor was burned out, shot, however you want to call it. There was a compressor problem. And because of the federal rules regarding air conditioners, if you have a compressor problem, you can't simply replace the compressor. You have to replace the entire unit because of the energy ratings. There's this thing called a SEER, and I don't know what that's an acronym for. But it's a SEER energy rating, and so you have to replace the whole thing with a newer unit. Can't keep repairing an older unit. Let's say the compressor fails. Now, I'm not sure about the, what you know, of course, that's the heart of the, you know, of an air conditioner is a compressor, obviously. So, to kind of make a long story short, or it was really, it was a short story. He said, well, I can replace it. I can, you know, I can get you a new air conditioner and replace it. And I said, well, yeah, go ahead. You got to have it. Have to have air conditioning. There's no way around it. If I didn't have air conditioning at home, there would be no point in going home during the summer. Because it's just, you know, for several months out of the year, it's just, it gets way unbearably too hot to try to live without it. Now, there are people that do, and there are people that have in the past, but it really takes a tremendous toll on your body to try to live in that kind of heat, or to exist in that kind of heat without air conditioning. So, gotta have it. And so, he was able, I was kind of surprised, he was able went up to Springdale and got the parts, got the new, the comprised the new air conditioner, and got back there, brought his son-in-law with him. I guess his son-in-law works with him, which I did not know, because in the past it's only been the one guy that's come out to my house to either check the air conditioner, put Freon in it, or work on the furnace. It's only been that one guy, but this time he brought his son-in-law with him, and so they kind of worked together, and then he went ahead and left, and then the son-in-law finished up the job, and he was out of there by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So that went pretty quickly. It wasn't cheap. Ended up costing me about $3,167 and some odd cents to kind of. You know, that was the total price, but now the air conditioner works again. There's this what they call an A coil in the bottom of the furnace, and so that had to come out, and then they put this new coil in, and it's not really an A coil. It's kind of more like you'd almost call it more like an M coil, because instead of a single A, like a triangular shape, this thing has two triangular shapes together, so it's, yeah, I don't know what they call it, but the old one they called an A-coil. That was kind of a common term, but this one, you know, has two triangular shapes side by side that fits into the same space. And then there's a, of course, you have the outside unit, so, and this new outside unit, instead of being kind of a gray, kind of a light gray like the old one was, the new one, of course, is green. You know, these manufacturers are trying to, you know, you're seeing the color green everywhere, because we're hearing all about green energy and green this and green that and green, so-called green appliances and so on and so forth. So they're just, I guess, sort of using the marketing idea, and we'll just make this thing light green. Make people think that it's environmentally friendly or something. But so in any case, they got it put together pretty quickly, and operating, and so I had air, after he left, I had air conditioning again, and also that's back in business. But and I guess if it was gonna fail, you know, the thing was 15 years old, so it lasted 15 years. If it was gonna fail, then now is as good a time as any, because typically those things fail when they're being stressed. That's usually when a furnace fails, and that's typically when air conditioning fails. It's when it's really being stressed during, you know, either the hottest part of the summer or the coldest part of the winter. That's when those things usually fail. So this one, I discovered that there was a problem before there really was a problem with the heat. Let's say I discovered it in July. Well, I would really be screwed at that point. So because that's typically their busy season, and I might have waited several days before something could have been done about it. But in this case, they discovered it. They didn't have anything else to do at the minute, and so they got it fixed pretty quickly, and the thing's back in business. So got that problem solved. It was kind of costly, as I say, but there are, you know, sometimes things like that happen where, you have something and it, you've paid for it, and but it breaks, it wears out, and you got to fix it. And, you know, there are ongoing costs associated with owning things, especially houses. You have ongoing maintenance issues. So, in any case, that was yesterday's excitement. And then, so yesterday afternoon, yesterday morning, the company, you know, they were calling wondering if I could come back to work a day early. And I ended up leaving a voicemail with, it was one of the fleet managers, ended up leaving a voicemail with them, kind of letting them know that, hey, I've got a little minor disaster going on, having the air conditioner replaced. Told them to call me back, but it was late yesterday afternoon that they did call, the dispatcher called, and asked me if I got my air conditioner fixed, and I said yes. So they had actually communicated, because the fleet manager is in Pennsylvania, whereas the dispatcher's in Nebraska. So they had actually communicated, and I told her, you know, yep, got it fixed, and told her the story. And so in any case, she had about four different loads that I was able to pick from. So I picked one that it picked up at Russellville, Arkansas, and it's delivering to Auburn, Indiana is up in the sort of the far northeast corner of the state. So but it delivers there at 2:30 in the afternoon Eastern time, Sunday or tomorrow. Today, right now as I'm speaking, it is Saturday afternoon. So I'm probably going to drive until about 7 o'clock or sometime after 7. I'm hoping to make it to maybe to the Effingham, Illinois area, if I can. Not sure about the mileage, but I should be able to, make it to Effingham. There's a number of truck stops in Effingham, and so that's where I'm hoping to make it to, and then I'll take a 10-hour break there, and then after I take the 10-hour break, then I will head on to Auburn, Indiana. So, you know, ended up being a fairly tight load, but I have a few extra hours to play with. Probably maybe 2 or 3 hours extra to kind of play with, so in order to make it there on time. But so I had to get up at went ahead and, you know, set my alarm for 5 a.m. this morning, and so I got up and got around, and it was probably whenever I was actually leaving town, it was in the truck. It was about a quarter after seven. And then I made it down to Russellville, and that turned out to be a pretty quick process, drop and hook. And then I weighed the load and was able to get underway. And the traffic hasn't been too terrible today. There is traffic out, but it hasn't been very bad. Came through some areas of fairly intense rain, and then the rains kind of came and went. And then, of course, now here in southern Illinois, it's cloudy, or kind of partly cloudy, or mostly cloudy. The sun's kind of popping out now and then, but and it looks, the road looks like it has rained here, or at least enough to make it wet at some point, and now the road is sort of mostly drying off. It's mostly dry road, but you can kind of see where out on the edges it's still a little bit wet, so obviously it did rain here some. But and here the temperature is about 72 degrees now, and now when I left home this morning it was about, what was it, 57. So it did, there was a, now yesterday, later in the afternoon yesterday, it did rain fairly hard, and then at one point there was even a little bit of hail. Ooh, like a pea-sized hail. And didn't rain a whole lot. I don't know, you know, I doubt if, I don't know, it might have rained an inch altogether. It's really hard to say. But after the rain, it did kind of cool off, but I guess on, when was it, Thursday, it was just super, super windy, you know, and then even Friday, there was still quite a bit of wind, but after, I guess a front must have come through, and that's what triggered the rain, and so it did kind of cool off after that, and so other than that, I have no idea what the weather was supposed to do. It's spring, and typically we end up with in the spring we end up with severe thunderstorms and tornadoes, and that's just a kind of a typical thing that happens in the springtime and the fall, actually. But anyway, I did have several days at home and got away from the truck for a few days, and probably didn't sleep as much as I should have. But I don't know, this shoulder, I don't know, it does seem to be getting better, but it's still kind of giving me some problem. Especially going to sleep, and sometimes, you know, in the middle of the night I'll wake up because it's kind of hurting. And so hopefully that'll get better over time. And now this morning, if they didn't have to set an alarm, I would have probably slept until about noon. So my thinking is that once I do stop up here, and if I can make it to Effingham, that I'll probably be able to just go to bed, and shouldn't have, unless the shoulder's going to hurt and keep me awake, I shouldn't have any, you know, too much trouble going to sleep and kind of catching up on my sleep. Of course, I'm going to have to set an alarm in order to, obviously, in order to make sure that I'm going to get to want to leave it within plenty of time, so I can definitely make the delivery appointment early tomorrow afternoon in Auburn, Indiana, because I need to be there by 1:30 Eastern time or 12:30. 12:30 Central Time. So that really, I don't know, if I look at the GPS, you know, I don't know, probably by the time I get fuel. So that gives me about 2 extra hours to kind of play with, which isn't, you know, that isn't much. It's better than none at all. 2 hours really isn't a whole lot. It can quickly be taken up just by stopping a couple of times. It really does add up. The time that you stop does add up. Now, of course, while I was home, I got that Windows Home server, and I think I pretty much got it figured out. I backed up all of the computers except for that Mac Mini. Never really messed with that, but I was able to back up all of the other machines, and you know, and so I, and there's a couple, I don't know, there's all, you know, with a box like that, there's always going to be a few little, you know, a couple little quirks, and you know, especially, let's be honest, especially if Windows is involved, there's going to be a few little quirks, and I think that's largely due to the way Microsoft kind of does things. And then you kind of got to remember that it's, you know, there's hardware, different hardware manufacturers, different computer makers sort of implement things differently. And but there, you know, no major problems. I just had a little couple of, you know, there was a couple of little incompatibility messages that I was kind of messing with, and I researched online, and other people hadn't really seemed to figure them out. And you know, before I left, I was able to, you know, I kind of figured out what the deal was. And that's usually the case. If you know, if I plunge into something like that and I run into an error, you know, I may have to live with the error for a couple of days, and then normally I'm able to pretty quickly come up with a solution. You know, so, but the Windows Home server's pretty neat. You know, now I'm not, see, they now the HP, this HP Smart or Media Smart server comes with it's this prepackaged McAfee antivirus, and of course it has to be a server version. They've got this McAfee antivirus. It's a trial version, and they want you to, you know, they want you to install it. They don't pre-install it, but they want you to install it. And I looked online and to see what other people were saying about it that had installed it, and they weren't too happy with it. And I've never been much of a McAfee fan, so I'm just, for now, just leave the antivirus off of it. Because it's really, unless I get a virus on one of those other machines, which is probably not very likely, because I'm not really browsing on those other machines very much, and I'm not, you know, and of course I'm very careful with email regardless of which machine. So the only way that server could get a virus would be if it got infected from one of those other machines. And as I say, the likelihood of that happening is fairly remote. So, you know, unless there's some virus that happens to come through that, you know, just on a naked machine, you know, and that can't happen if you have a firewall. That really can't happen. Just automatically it can't happen. So, and of course I'm behind my that wireless internet provider's firewall. So my machines, you know, are blocked from traffic that's just trying to find unprotected, you know, just find computers on the internet. The internet provider's firewall rejects all that traffic. Plus, I've got my own firewall in an Apple router that I have. So, and then plus you have firewalls in each computer. So, and the server. So there's really no reason to put antivirus on there. Now, if it was, you had a bunch of computer users and, you know, just a variety of people using computers on a network and you have a server, you probably better do something. But in my case, I'm the only one that's using it, and unless somebody comes over and browses or whatever. So the chances of a virus coming in are pretty remote. So there's really no point in putting any antivirus on the server. And, you know, with the server, you know, that it's Windows Home Server. It's based on Windows Server 2003. They want you, usually, the antivirus makers kind of try to force you into buying a server version, which is much more expensive, because they're thinking, oh, commercial business. And those tend to be more expensive antiviruses, so, and they're of dubious value anyway, because usually they can't, if there's a brand new virus, they can't stop it until they have the definition, and so there's really no point in kind of putting that on the server. And there's this, let me turn that down. There's this one guy that one of the posts when I was looking to see about the McAfee and the Windows Home Server that HP gives, or you know, that you get this trial version of McAfee antivirus for the server. This one guy was saying, well, he made the mistake of installing it, and then he couldn't get rid of it, or couldn't get rid of parts of it, or it was causing problems. And so that made the decision right there. Don't want anything to do with that. That's one of the real problems with Windows, is installing and then uninstalling and installing and uninstalling. Well, on a server, it's more like an appliance, and once you get the appliance to work, you really don't want to start, you don't want to install a bunch of software on it. You have, basic functionality, and of course, if somebody can add some server functionality, then that's one thing, but if otherwise you're not using it as a computer, there's really no point in sticking a bunch of crap on it. And I kind of consider a McAfee antivirus to be kind of crap. I've never been very impressed with it. So, and then on the other machines, I'm using the other Windows machines, I'm using Microsoft's own, Security Essentials. It's an antivirus / anti-spyware thing, and it's free. Now, that won't run on the server. I did check that in some, one of the posts I read, they said this will not work on a, it won't install on a Windows Home Server. So, otherwise, I would have put that on there, because that seems to work pretty well on every, Windows XP, Windows Vista machine that I've tried. The Microsoft Security Essentials really seems to work pretty well. This free antivirus, anti-spyware that they give you, and it doesn't seem to slow the machine down at all. It just seems to work pretty well, and it has a very small footprint. So I have that on Windows machines, and but am not, as I say, the server's just kind of sitting there doing its job and of kind of collecting media and collecting backups, and so I've as I say, I've got all of the machines backed up, all of the different installations backed up, except for that Mac Mini, and I just never really, if I would have had more time, I would have probably gotten it too. But I would have had to kind of manually do that myself, because it, it's a PowerPC version of OS X, and this Windows Home Server is really set up to work with Intel-based Macs running OS X, and newer, so but I could still use a program like Super Duper to make an image-based backup and then back it up to a, you know, a public share on that server. So, or what's called a public share, you know. But so in any case, kind of interesting, and it's kind of nice to have all those machines backed up, and that server just kind of sits there, you know, sits there. The idea is it sits there in the background, and it just does what it's supposed to do, just like you know, just like a router, or just like some kind of an appliance, basically. Lately, when I've been getting into political discussions with friends, relatives, the topic kind of, at least the conservative ones, the topic, you know, they'll start talking about, well, you know, about legal remedies. And, you know, I quickly kind of launch into my diatribe about morality kind of being the underpinning. And without the morality, you can have all of the laws in the world, and it's not going to do any good. We've already got all kinds of laws on the books. You know, like, look at the outrage that's happened with, at least in the news media and in Democrat circles, look at the outrage that's happened just by Arizona kind of passing into their own law, state law, laws that mirror the federal systems, the federal laws. But of course, the federal laws were already on the books, but they're not being enforced. And now all these people are outraged that they're calling, they're trying to say, well, it's racial profiling, and they're telling all kinds of lies about what Arizona's law is. And basically, the Arizona's law states that if somebody's stopped for some other reason, let's say they're speeding or whatever, they're committed a crime or suspicion of, you know, let's say committing a robbery or something, if the policeman thinks they might be illegal or they're suspicious about it, they can ask to see some ID. And, you know, that's all it is. You know, they can't just randomly, you know, go up to people and say, show me your papers. Now, I'm being asked, and I've talked about this before, I'm being asked for my license, my driver's license, which is my ID, basically a picked photo ID. I'm asked to see that typically, sometimes, you know, at least once a day. I had, you know, it happened yesterday. I had to show my ID. It happened today when I picked this load up. Usually it happens constantly when I pick loads up. It just kind of depends. And so sometimes I'm showing my driver's license to different people multiple times a day. Well, isn't that a paper? Of course it is. So I'm having to prove who I am constantly, and yet, you know, they're whining and moaning and groaning, you know, how dare Arizona, you know, pass a law stating that if a law enforcement officer sees someone that they suspect of being an illegal alien, or, you know, kind of encounters them, in the course of their job, as far as, you know, if they've broken some other law, then they can ask to see their identification. Well, obviously, they're probably going to ask for it anyway. You know, if a policeman suspects you of breaking the law, the first thing they ask for is your ID. And, you know, so, you know, it's, the law should be enforced anyway, but in any case, regardless, it all revolves around morality. And if too many people in the society lose their morality, they're separated from their common sense, then the society's going to crumble. I don't care what laws there are, and then you're going to have a dictatorship to kind of contain everything. And but I realize that with at least with the conservative people I'm talking to, that that's kind of the direction that I go in when I'm, you know, rather than trying to talk about this law or that law or the outrage that laws aren't being enforced or whatever, or the intent behind different laws and policies, the root of it is morality. And I realized, you know, my mom's a liberal, and whenever we end up talking politics, you know, I realize that, you know, I'm always trying to kind of end up arguing either over facts or over whether a particular, let's say it's a law or kind of the direction behind government, whether it's right or wrong. And she has a funny way of looking at things, just to put it mildly. From a political perspective, she's just got this weird way of looking at things, and I can understand why, but she just will not see. You can't reason with, you know, when it comes to politics, you can't reason with her. And I realize that, you know, I'll kind of get dragged into that kind of an argument with her, but I'm not really bringing up the, you know, the morality argument. And, you know, so I've kind of decided not to, I'm not going to argue politics with her. But I will argue morality with her, and that's you know, that's going to be interesting. But, so... No more politics or political arguments with her or any other liberal that I encounter. It's, you know, I'm going to be talking about politics, or not politics, but morality. And that's going to be interesting because, you know, if you really make the moral arguments properly, then people that you think are conservative may not be. They may just be selfish. You know, this, a lot of the libertarian ideas, it's really about, I think what appeals to some people about libertarianism is the idea that, what, you know, it's just ultimate selfishness. You know, they're in favor of drugs. You know, legalize the drugs. What a person does with their body is their business. You know, and then they want low taxes. But then they want to legalize drugs at the same time, and that the two really don't go together unless you just look at it from the standpoint of absolute selfishness, and then it can kind of begin to make a little sense. And you know, but you bring up the morality argument, and if you do bring it up in the right way, you know, where it's, you're really kind of hitting people with just genuine truth, then you're going to find out pretty quickly whether, you know, what, I guess, what spirit is behind a person. And, you know, so that's kind of the direction I'm going in. I really don't, you know, I've gotten to the point where I really don't care about laws or particular personalities so much as just morality in general. And a lot of people, you know, just kind of talking to people are open to those ideas. They realize, maybe they haven't really thought about it, but, you know, when you bring it up to them, they realize that morality in the modern world, especially in the last 30, 40 years, morality has kind of been systematically compromised. And so it's, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting, you know, and I think it's a better way of sort of making the argument to people. And again, you know, you can try to tweak laws and change this and change that all day long, and it's not going to do a darn bit of good unless you have the bulk of people being, you know, really moral and wanting to be moral. Now, nobody's perfect, you know, and you say the word moral or morality, and a lot of people have this knee-jerk reaction. Of course, we've all been kind of, for, you know, my entire life, I've been kind of around people where, oh, you can't legislate moralities, that is, you hear people say. Well, actually, they're right. You cannot. You know, meaning that you should give up. Well, there are certain things that, you know, let's say murder, for example. There's legislation certainly against murder in probably every country that I know of. There's legislation against murder, but yet people do it. Now, obviously, murder is immoral. So that is a case of, you are kind of legislating against, morality in a way. So the laws should follow morality. The laws should sort of reflect basic moral tenets, basic ideas of right and wrong. And then, of course, people, you know, will begin to argue over them. The farther away you get, you know, then people begin to argue with the minutia. But there should be basic laws against robbing, raping, stealing, murdering, pillaging, so on and so forth. But beyond that, you can't, if everybody is corrupt and everybody's, let's say everybody's, you know, the only things that restrains them is the fear of getting caught, but if you turn your back, then they're going to just rob and rape and steal and murder and pillage, then you're in trouble. You have to have a dictator that kind of tells, you know, kind of is able to sort of give everybody the ultimate suggestion that you do things this way or else. But the way a country like America, you know, was founded, the vast majority of people have to have their own morality. They have to be kind of self-correcting. They have to already want to do the right thing. Now, nobody's perfect. Everybody's got some kind of character flaw. But there's a kind of a difference between, you know, you can have a character flaw and sort of not want it, but you have it anyway, versus people that have character flaws and they love their character flaws. They're happy with their character flaws. And there's kind of a, you know, it's almost like a polarity. And so there is that difference in people. But so in any case, the moral argument, you know, the need for morality, if you explain it to people, then they can really see it. If you can articulate it in the right way, people can actually see it, and they can be persuaded. And that's really what has to happen. Now, that's not necessarily an easy thing to persuade people, but it's interesting because you can what I'm finding is if the better I am at articulating my ideas, even people that really haven't thought about it much in those terms are able to kind of grasp it. They seem to be able to grasp it pretty quickly. And probably at the same time, people that are kind of comfortable and happy with their character flaws, regardless of what kind of camouflage they pretend to be, or camouflage they cover themselves with, or what they pretend to be, the more effective my arguments become. The mask falls off and they're repelled. So I don't know. I'm going to just basically stop, you know, try to get away from the idea of arguing left-right politics, because it's really revolving more around morality. And again, you can try to tweak this law and tweak that law, and it's not really going to do any good. The moral underpinnings are what tie everything together. And without those, you have a dictatorship of some sort. I have arrived at Effingham, Illinois, at the Petro truck stop here. Probably been here, I guess, upwards of an hour and a half or so. I went inside and got a small, I guess you'd say it's kind of a smallish bowl of chili, because I didn't want to eat a great big massive meal and then come back out here and try to sleep. That's never a good idea. So this bowl of chili was sort of overpriced for what it was. It was almost $5, but nonetheless, it was okay. This kind of place, let's say you order a hamburger or something, it's $7 or $8, and they're going to throw in French fries whether you want them or not. And then you add a drink and it's over $10. Or so even with this bowl of chili plus a drink, it was like $7-something, which is, you know, the stuff's kind of overpriced. But in any case, I parked here because there's plenty of parking, especially since it's the weekend. So, but in any case, probably better be cutting this off. See if I can get this put together and uploaded and published and get headed towards the bed. See if I can't catch up on my sleep a little bit. Hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.